Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. Eddie Trunk here with you. Time for another edition of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday via podcastone.com and iTunes. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for streaming. Thank you for listening. And here we are all set for another week of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Let's see, a few things to get into at the top of the show. As usual, I'd like to give you a little overview of what's coming up, what's going on, maybe some of my upcoming appearances as I travel around the country trying to connect with everybody and say hello where and when I can. Various things coming up, including this Saturday, March 3rd, I will be in Tulsa at the IDL Ballroom where I will be hosting a show with Slaughter. Hope to see you guys there if you are in the Tulsa area. Had many, many great times at this club. Expect this Saturday to be no exception and look forward to seeing everybody at the Slaughter Show in Tulsa at the IDL. Tickets are at Stubwire, and that's going out down 8 o'clock this coming Saturday night, March 3rd. Then in New York City, I'm hosting a record release party for a band called Crimshaw. That's on March 24th at Arlene's Grocery. And then doing a speaking show, something I have not done in a long time, a Q&A speaking show. That'll be happening in Englewood, Ohio, just outside of Dayton on April 7th, and that is at the Courtyard Lounge. Come on out. We'll get into some fun Q&A, taking your questions, your comments, and have a good time doing that. LA Guns, IDL Ballroom, that's on April 13th. I'll be back in Tulsa to host that. April 22nd, I'm at Proof Rooftop Lounge in Houston, where I will host a show with Tom Kiefer. And also coming up on May 25th, 26th, 27th, I'm at Rocklahoma, where I've hosted every year, getting ready to host that again Memorial Weekend. If you go to eddietrunk.com, which is my website, you can enter to win tickets, three-day general admission passes to Rocklahoma this year. One grand prize winner gets a reserved pair of tickets upgraded as well. And I stay in Tulsa a little longer on May 30th to host a Striper show at the IDL Ballroom. If you missed anything, want more information, links to buy tickets, again, it's all on eddietrunk.com. On my website, music news is updated daily. You can see my blog, which is the Trunk Report. You can email me through the site, eddie@eddietrunk.com. And copies of my books, either of my books, signed, personalized by me, hit the books tab on my site. Merchandise is there. There's a merch store. Lots you can do on eddietrunk.com. And if you become an all-access member of my site, you can hear my radio show on demand and a whole lot more as far as bonus content and more. So there you go. All on my website. Social media is at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So this week, I'm going to bring you some audio once again from interviews that I did on board the Monsters of Rock cruise a few weeks ago. I broadcast my daily Sirius XM show from the cruise each and every day. And last week, if you were listening to the podcast, we had Zach Wild on, which was from the studio. However, the interview that I did with Steve Harris that aired in last week's podcast, that was done from the cruise. During the time on the Monsters of Rock cruise, I had countless guests on. I'm trying to bring you some different moments from that cruise and some of the highlight interviews. And today I'm going to bring to you two different interviews with members of LA Guns. LA Guns, to me, are a band that, unfortunately, in a lot of ways, are somewhat overlooked when we talk about sort of the great hard rock bands to come out of the 80s. Because they've had a lot of lineup changes. And they've had a lot of drama and a lot of dysfunction in their history. And I think that has hurt them significantly in terms of their standing in the music industry today. During the time that I was doing that metal show, we had warring factions of LA Guns on the air. I've had warring factions of the band on my radio show over the years. And LA Guns are really one of the first bands to have had the whole two different bands using the same name phenomenon go on. Well, a couple years ago, all that changed when Phil Lewis and Tracy Guns, against all odds, decided to reconcile and come together again under the banner of just one LA Guns. And the casualty of that reunion was drummer Steve Riley, who was the guy that Tracy claims he always had the issue with. And Phil Lewis essentially sided with Tracy at this point, and Steve Riley, who has not been heard of since, has become sort of a casualty of this whole thing. But Tracy and Phil stayed together. They brought in Johnny Martin on bass, a young drummer by the name of Shane Fitzgibbons, and interestingly enough, the guy that had replaced Tracy Guns in Phil Lewis's version of the band, a younger guy by the name of Michael Grant, was retained for the reunion. And Tracy Guns talked about this and said that he thought what Michael was doing in that band was unique and different and thought he would be a good complement to stay in the band. Turned out to me to be a very smart move because it's a two guitar band now. The dynamics are really cool. And Michael Grant is a hell of a performer, and you know, he's a little younger than the rest of the guys, maybe brings in a little bit of a different crowd. He definitely is a future ahead of him, I think. So I thought it was a great move by LA Guns to retain him. Nice of Tracy to sort of check his ego and say, yeah, we should keep this guy. And it's worked brilliantly. And LA Guns have made a new album called The Missing Piece that was in my top two or three albums of last year. It's a really, really, really good record. It really is. And, you know, it's doing whatever any new record from an 80s-based rock band is going to do in today's day and age. It's not really selling. It's a few thousand copies, what have you, but that's what happens. Hopefully more people are exposed to it than record sales show, but that's not unusual. I mean, the record sales are in the dump. But it is a really good record, and I encourage you to check it out if you get a chance. And the band live is on fire. I think the LA Guns record, Phil Lewis told me, sold about 10. Did he tell me 10,000 copies? 5,000 copies? I'm not sure. I mean, you think about back in the day, you sneezed and you sold 500,000. You know, it's just a different world. But anyway, the album's real good. The band is on fire live. I've had a chance to see him many, many times. I'll see him again coming up soon, as I mentioned at that show in Tulsa. And on the Monsters of Rock cruise, Tracy and Phil came over and sat with me, and you'll hear that interview first. And then, as a bonus tag-on to round out the LA Guns podcast this week, Michael Grant joins me for a brief interview. And this came about, obviously, Tracy and Phil are the original founding members of the band that are in the lineup, so they're going to do the bulk of the interviews, and things are going to be centered around them. But Michael Grant's story, which I never knew because I saw Michael Grant, I think I may have even seen the very first show he ever played as a member of LA Guns. And the day before we did this interview, I sat with him on the at the buffet on the cruise ship. And I never really knew his backstory. And we were sitting around having lunch, and he was telling me this incredible backstory of his growing up in New York and being thrown out of school as a kid, and then being relocated to the Philippines and then becoming a child acting star in the Philippines. It's a crazy story. And I said to him, I said, Michael, you should be telling this to me on the air. This is a great story. So I carved out 10, 15 minutes, and you'll hear that second. And I encourage you to hear it. It really is a fascinating story. So that's what we have for you on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. LA Guns across the board. Founding members Phil Lewis and Tracy Guns at first, and then Michael Grant, the band's second guitar player, also with a brand new interview, which I think you're really going to enjoy. And again, I think it's a great story that you guys should check out. Hey, make sure if you shop on Amazon, you start on my page, amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Very easy. Go do all your shopping anywhere you want on Amazon. Check out the stuff that I handpicked, though. And always start, bookmark that page, amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Let's hit a break. We will come back and we'll get into it with Tracy Guns and Phil Lewis of LA Guns, an interview that originally aired on my daily show on Sirius XM 106 volume and comes to you from the Monsters of Rock Cruise. Coming up next.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Here are some useful car tips you might not be aware of. For instance, a coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage, and you can place your key fob to your chin to increase its range. Weird, right? Well, here's another tip you also might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right, TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with a TrueCar certified dealer. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger. I used to host the Art of Charm podcast, but now it's time for something new. The Jordan Harbinger Show. Did you know you can be entertained and actually get a boost in your life at the same time? On this show, we dig into the superpowers of the world's most interesting thinkers and top talents. Then we deliver them to you right into your ears. But I get it. We're not all superheroes. That's why we give you their blueprint so you can live what you listen. After 1,000 interviews, learning 5 languages, and getting arrested in a country that doesn't even exist anymore, I'm now more ready than ever to introduce you to the Jordan Harbinger Show. Listen free to The Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Okay, a bit of a double dip this week on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Two different interviews, but members of the same band. We start with founding members of LA Guns, Phil Lewis and Tracy Guns. As I mentioned, they have made a new album called The Missing Piece. That's a really, really good record, and they are currently out on tour playing some phenomenal live shows. Phil Lewis, really, in my opinion, one of the more underrated singers in rock history. The guy is now in his early 60s, and if you've seen them live, just belts it out with the best of them. Tracy Guns, same deal, very much an underrated guitar player as well, such a fine player. And if you get a chance to see him, like I said, you will see all that. The band is just totally on fire right now. And hope you guys enjoy this interview with Tracy and Phil. It took place on the Monsters of Rock cruise. My broadcast position was a little Irish pub on board the ship. We had a live audience in front of us. This happened live on my Sirius XM show on Volume. So we go back to the cruise ship, Tracy Guns and Phil Lewis. And then after this, I got Michael Grant of LA Guns coming up as well on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. Enjoy. Mr. Tracy Guns has walked in. Good to see you, sir.
Hello. How are you?
Tracy sent me the most ridiculous picture of his face during the lifeboat drill that I ever saw the other day as we got on the ship. But it's classic Tracy Guns. Good to see you, brother.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning, indeed. Yeah. And Mr. Phil Lewis, good
Hello,
to see
Eddie.
You, sir.
How are you doing? Good to be back.
Very good. And as I said, I've almost become in the last, I don't know, the last few months, an L.A. Guns groupie at this point. I've seen you guys
We've seen a lot
of
you, yeah.
Feels like I've seen enough. Please stay away, Eddie.
Well, what's up with your name tag on the bunk in the bus? I just noticed that. Eddie Trunk, and nobody sleeps in there until you're around.
Yeah, exactly. But no, man, it's been amazing, and I've talked about it before. You guys have made an amazing record together, The Missing Piece. And you've been touring, and I've seen probably a half a dozen shows at this point that you've performed together. Mm. It just keeps getting better. The record is phenomenal. Phil, starting with you, I mean, we all know all the backstories leading up to this. No need to rehash that. But now that this has been happening.
Oh, we hate each other, man.
Have you hate each other
now?
Oh,
God, that's why the record's so good.
Is it imploding already? Are we falling apart already?
Hey, I just watched the Almost Famous. I know how it works. The guy says something like, we have to hate each other because that's what the best, you know, combination is.
Do tensions help?
No.
But some bands have made great records when they've been imploding at times.
Yeah, but usually when those bands are imploding, they're doing loads of great drugs. So there's a balance there. For us, we're just not drug kind of guys. So when we get frustrated with each other or, you know, there's other elements that come in that can separate.
We're having a time of our lives. We're having a great time. This is the first cruise we've done together.
Yeah, that's true.
We've both done cruises, but we've never actually played one together. We're going down to Australia next month, and we've never done that together either, or New Zealand. So it's, you know, even though it's, you know, we know each other, like we've done so much together, there's still quite a lot that we haven't done, and it definitely keeps it interesting.
How is the chemistry working together different now than it was the last time around?
We don't have, you know, here's the thing, you know, when the first record came out, we expected it was going to sell 10,000 copies, and it ended up going gold, and it just blew our minds. It just way exceeded our expectations. And, you know, and the success can actually kind of work against you, you know, because before we knew it, we had like business managers and accountants and publicists, and a lot of people got involved, and it made it took a lot of the fun out of it. You know, when we first started the band, we didn't have nothing, fuck all. And it was fun.
Well, I think another analogy, too, is like somehow in some realm, we are artistic people, you know. And when you start having people just hanging on, you know, around it, their opinions, you know, everybody's
That's
got opinions.
Right. Yeah, the publicist's wife doesn't like the second song on the record.
Right.
Like,
you know, yeah. That gets very frustrating.
Yeah. Truly Spinal Tap.
Uh-huh. It really did.
And that made, it was a challenge, made being creative and keeping the vibe a challenge with all that going around you.
Yeah. But talking specifically about this record, because... Listen, the reality is a lot of bands that have been around for a few decades, like L.A. Guns, they'll make a new record and it'll be, oh, it's okay. It isn't what it used to be.
Well,
it wasn't
we
what
know.
They... This record
we knew
is
going
really
in. We,
good,
Yeah,
man.
We knew we weren't going to sell a million copies. You know, we're realistic about that, but it didn't stop us.
But
from
nobody
making...
does. But Yeah. But the fact that you were able to, after the years apart and everything that went on between the two of you and the different bands and all that, to come together creatively and make a record like this, I think is astonishing.
We did it for the right reason. You know, it wasn't the money. Nobody said, oh, I've got a shitload of money for you guys. It just happened organically, naturally, and through the music.
Well, I think, too, you know, a lot of artists don't pay attention to their engineers and producers as they're going through their careers. And when it ends up on your lap and you have to engineer and produce a record eventually, you should have learned a lot from the people that you worked with in those 30 years, let's say. And that was the benefit of me not drinking or doing too much cocaine. Where landing in my lap was a good thing because, you know, we worked with Andy Johns and Michael James Jackson.
He did a great job producing it, didn't he?
Tracy amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Job. Yeah,
you know, that was I was really impressed.
I think every artist should produce their own stuff. Yeah. It'll sound how they want it.
But a lot of people can't. I mean, a lot of people don't know what they're doing. I mean, you must have, Trace, over the years, taken the time with the producers you have worked, like Andy Johns or anybody else, to learn. I mean, I'm sure you learned a lot,
You're supposed to learn. Yeah. That's what life's about. You learn all this great stuff, then you die.
Who was the guy you learned the most from as far as producing?
Eddie Kramer.
Yeah.
And he was just there for a brief time. And then
Andy Johns, of course.
And then, you know, the next in succession was Andy and Michael James Jackson. And, you know, the greatest thing about Andy is Andy made up stories of how he did stuff great. So it was like, Wow, really? And so you could try that. You go, no, you didn't. You know, but
it depends what time of the night.
Right. Yeah. You know, so, but it was basically just kind of walking around the studio, you know, in the middle of the day and taking notes where mics are placed, what kind of microphones and things like that. And then, you know, a producer's real job is to hire experts to do everything. That's really what a producer's job is. You know, it's like making a movie. You know, the producer doesn't generally write the movie, you know. So I have a great phone book of people, you know, mixers and mastering people and engineers and studios. And our band is loaded with crazy talent right now. And, you know, at the end of the day, a great song, you know, and I think we wrote some good songs.
You talk about the writing the songs and them coming together. Talk about the process. Did you, Tracy, some of the music that you wrote for this mm-hmm. record, was some of it written prior to you knowing you were going to reunite with Phil?
Most of it was.
It was?
Yeah. I've been writing. You know, this is kind of like a first record again because, you know, I was gone for 12 years in L.A. Guns. So I would write stuff through the years and go, oh, that doesn't fit whatever I'm doing now, you know, stuff like that. And then... And then I did those other projects, and some of the the other projects that I did, I would write music for, and the other guys would go, oh, that's horrible. I'd be like, cool, I'll just keep it for later.
It's definitely the songs, you know, that inspired me to want to do this record. I wasn't sure at first, you know, because he already had the deal, and I was like, well, am I going to sing a couple of songs on it or whatever? And, you know, once we started working together, it was like, no one's doing this. This is mine. It's like, yeah, it's great. It was, even in the... early stages, just the early demos, the stuff sounded really good.
Talk about the first time you guys both came together, because it wasn't to put the band back together. You guys originally came together.
We did a charity gig in Vegas, Toys for Tots. It was a Christmas time, and hadn't seen each other in 15 years, and he'd agreed to do it. You were playing with Rudy Zarzo at the time, weren't mm-hmm. you? It was Gunzo.
Gunzo.
And he was still. You were still doing the Rock Vault thing at that point?
I think so.
It was around that time. And then Jason, the guy who put it together, called me and said, Tracy's doing the vault, not the vault, the Vamped. Do you want to get up and sing a couple of songs? You know, if it's a charity thing, you can't really say no.
Well, you can. Yeah, you can. Phil, you
well,
can.
Well, no, my question was, is he getting paid? And he's like, no, he's not. I was like, all right, I'll do it.
I got paid.
Oh, wait.
He lied.
Just broke up right there.
I got paid. I lied.
But that's true. I mean, you could say no, yeah, but there had to be a side of you that felt like, you know, it would be good to see him again.
No, we didn't rehearse. We didn't even sound check. You know, we knew what songs we were going to do. And
Which were what?
It was Over the Edge, Sex Action, Never Enough. You know, the Nuggets. We always do them. It was, you know, we were, hey, how's it going? Hi. And then, boom, we were up on stage. And it's just like that first note, you know, the first scream of the Over the Edge. And it's, that's it. It's back. It's on. And all of a sudden it went up to 11. And nothing, no one else makes me do that. You know, I've worked with some great guitar players, great musicians, but nobody does it like.
And you guys had to know, though, that deep down inside, yes, it's a charity gig and all that, but if it went well, you had to know
it did go well, and then it got us talking, and I was doing some other stuff, and I said, hey, come, you know, jam with some of the things I'm doing, and then we got together, and then he started playing me the new songs, his new ideas, and it was like, that was it. I was sold.
We should talk about the rest of the band, too, because the whole band is killer. Tracy, take that one, man, because, I mean, Michael Grant, who had been playing with
the other version
of the band before you rejoined, everyone figured, well, Tracy's back, Michael's gone. But Michael's a huge part of what you do now, and you give him a huge showcase live, too.
Yeah. You know, when he joined the band, he was the first guy that did his thing, you know what I mean? And
with what you had originally done.
Yeah, like, you know, he wasn't, you know, wearing a scarf or, what you know, the stupid shit people do when they try to copy other people. He just went in there and did it, and he just kind of, I don't think he ever learned one of my solos or anything, you know?
No, he's a young Tracy.
He's very rebellious.
He's you 10 years ago.
And really cool guy, and I made friends with him pretty quickly after he had joined the band the first time, you know? And he would ask me all the time, hey, man, you're not coming back to L.A. Guns, right?
You know, he was worried about his gig.
Yeah, he was worried about his gig, you know. And I said, no, I'm not going to do L.A. Guns again. And I lied. And
Again.
That's Nikki Sixx. I'm a liar. So we're putting the band together. And I said, I really want Michael in the band. And Shane and Johnny, our bass player and drummer, they had been playing with me in my solo band for a couple of years already. And, you know, and we're just very jam heavy in that band. So, like, our chemistry is really great. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we can just kind of walk on stage without a set list and just play music. So I figured, well, I'm going to take these guys because I, at that point, I couldn't live without Shane and Johnny at all. And I realized how important Michael was to the image of the band, you know, as well as his talent, you know. I just had a feeling it would work. I didn't know it would work. You know, I had a feeling it would. And the first rehearsal, you know, we played Stairway to Heaven and Michael played the vocal melody on his guitar. And I'm like, this is great, man, you know. And then Phil came in and then we did that Hair Fest.
Oh, yeah, the Hair Nation Festival.
We are the greatest hair metal band of all time. I'm going to say it right now.
As someone who hates the term hair metal, I just prefer to think you're one of the greatest 80s rock bands of all time.
We're hair metal, man.
Yes, no. Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, because that's the thing is watching you guys now and hearing the attack of what you're doing with these songs, the old songs, the new songs mixed together, this lineup of the band, you and Michael up there. This guy right here, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Phil Lewis, it may be one of the most underrated singers.
Yeah, let's
in rock
not forget
history.
That.
I mean, because what?
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that.
It took some time.
It's crazy what this guy.
It took a while.
For everybody.
It took a while, but yeah, thank you very much. Yeah.
I mean, seriously. I mean, there's vocally, it's stunning what you're doing up there.
Thank
on
you,
top
man.
Of what the power you. Coming off of the instruments and what these guys are playing. So it's
very inspiring. You know, I really look forward to shows, and it's like in the old days I didn't so much. You know, it was just kind of like what we did, our job. But now I really look forward. A couple of hours before we go on, it's like, yeah.
You know, I wanted to ask you this too because I never really got this story. Knowing LA Guns from the beginning, from the very first record, and remembering when that first record came out, I had known you, Phil, because you were in a band with Phil Collin of Def Leppard called Girl that released
right.
two albums.
Yeah.
And I like both of those records a lot. LA Guns did Hollywood Tease,
yeah,
which was originally
that,
a girl.
When I first joined, yeah. That
I just think we're girls.
Tracy had already, he learned it.
Tracy, were you a fan of Girl?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how a guy from England singing in Girl... Tracy Guns here.
No, it's amazing. The record
LA.
Was never released in America, and it's great.
How did
you guys come together?
Okay,
initially,
Izzy lived with me at my mom's house.
Izzy Stradlin,
and he turned me on to Hanoi Rocks and Girl and Japan and stuff like that. Stuff that wasn't so metal. You know what I mean at the time, and we both had agreed that Phil was the greatest next singer. That was ever going to happen. You know, we were teenagers, and we were just like, we were in love with this guy. You know, he had the look and his the tone and the phrasing was different than anybody else that was putting out records at that time. And so what happened was, is the singer that we had at the time, we had our record deal, and we went to the final meeting, and he did a big old heroin nod when the guy asked him a question. We lost our deal.
Well, hold on. LA Guns, as LA Guns, you had a deal. And you had a different singer.
Just about to sign the deal.
Just about to sign the deal.
Going
like
and,
this.
Yeah.
And your singer had some heroin episode?
He OD'd. He passed out.
He passed out at the contract signing?
At the contract signing.
Holy shit.
You know, I think I was 19 years old. Yeah. I didn't even know, what heroin. I mean, I knew that.
Can you say who that was, or you prefer not to?
Did
he ever go on to do anything?
No,
not really. No.
No.
Okay,
no.
Tell me off the air then.
Yeah, he. You know, the problem with junkies is if they're not rich, they can't afford to do it and have a normal life. You know what I mean? So that's kind of the downfall.
And was that label Polygram who you ended up signing with?
It was a big deal.
So it was the same label you ultimately ended up signing with. Okay, so the singer in the band about to be signed literally ODs.
He doesn't OD. He just falls asleep.
You know,
nods out as he's about to sign his record deal.
Yeah.
And then what happens?
And then I walk downstairs with our manager, and
it
he
was
goes
over.
And he goes, I don't know what to tell you. And I go, I still didn't know it was heroin. You know, we walk downstairs. I go, well, what's wrong with him? He goes, really? And I'm like, yeah. You know, what's wrong with it? And He goes, he does heroin. And I'm like, no. Yeah, come on. Nobody actually does that. You know, I'm thinking in my head at the time.
Because I'd be the same way because I've never done drugs. So I'm ignorant to if somebody tells me someone's on drugs, they can look at somebody. They're on this. They're on that. I don't know what that means because I've never done it. So I don't know. But so you had no idea what was going on. You just thought he was having a bad day and was tired.
Yeah.
I mean, on the biggest day of his life.
Well, yeah. I mean, but see, the thing was, is it was nothing new because he would show up to rehearsal late and tired every time. So and Mick, our guitar player at the time, he'd go, oh, you know, he just works really hard, you know. And I just like, oh, that makes sense because I don't work hard at all, so I have energy all the time. Okay, so, you know, so it completely made sense to me that way. So anyways, we were lucky. We had a Welsh manager, Alan Jones, who's really our surrogate father still to this day. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, what do you want to do? Who do you want to sing for the band? And I'm like, Robert Plant, you know. And he goes, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. And I go, I know. I go, do you know this guy Phil Lewis, you know? And he goes, I do. You know, and I go, well, that's who I want to sing for the band. And within 10 days, he was in L.A.
So Polygram was still willing to.
Let me just add, Alan Jones was, he was our manager, but he was an amazing character that he owned a bunch of, like when Melrose was really swinging. Like in the mid to late 80s, he had four or five stores.
Melrose in L.A.,
Melrose,
the street.
Yeah, right. Melrose Avenue.
Big shopping street for people that don't know.
And it was like, you know, it was more than shopping. It was a whole scene. It was the whole Hollywood scene right there. And he was just king of it. And he managed the band. Actually, Mick worked for him originally.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And Alan ended up firing him because the whole time he was working on L.A. Gun stuff. And he's like, why am I paying you? And he's just like, so Mick was like, fair enough, you can fire me, but would you be interested in managing the band? And Alan's like, yeah, right? Yeah. And he ended up managing the band. And, you know, he because of his, you know, like he was involved in all like the clothes and the whole Melrose fashion. So I kind of knew him from, he was a big deal in London as well.
He also played saxophone
Amen Corner. Mm-hmm. And he called me and you know, the timing was absolutely perfect. And he's like, do you want to come? He was talking about the scene and what was going on.
You were in England still at this time.
Yeah.
And the timing was perfect because at that point, had Phil left to join Def Leppard and Girl was kind of falling apart?
Long after that. I was.
You were just playing with Bernie, I think.
Yeah, I was in Tourmé. I was working with Bernie Tourmé at the time. And that was, you know, kind of run its course. So the timing was perfect. And Alan was like, well, when can you come out? I said, well, tomorrow. Let's do it.
And had you been to this? Because Girl never played
in
the States,
no,
right?
No, we did not. No, I mean, I'd been over on visits, on trips and stuff. But, you know, that was it. That was April 1st, 86. And I never went back.
Pretty big leap of faith, though, for a kid to come from England to this guy he doesn't know named Tracy Guns.
But
you're dangling the record deal at that point, right?
Well,
you still had the deal?
No, we didn't still have the deal. We lost the deal.
Lost the deal.
And we were stupid. We were young. You know, so, like, you know, it's kind of dumb luck, isn't it? You know what I mean? You just kind of, like, think something in your head. It's like, you know, making a building without any foundation. Oh, I just want it to look good, you know, and then eventually it falls down, you know? And that's kind of how we went into it blindly. But it sounded great, and I think it, you know, right away it sounded great, and it sounded different because, you know, I was really, really into Wasp and Motley Crue that day. You know what I mean? Like, whenever L.A. Guns was, like, you know, kind of amalgamating. And, you know, we were in danger of sounding like a typical heavy metal band, probably, you know. I mean, I was very young. I was 17, you know, and doing it, you know. And so I was not open-minded at all. You know, but the thing is that I had this immense respect for him, and so like whatever he was going to bring to the table, I didn't care. It was like, yes, this
we didn't have a deal. It took us about 6-8 months before we could get label interested in again, and it ended up being the same label.
Right.
It was Bob Scoro signed us from Polygram, and this time the signing ceremony went a lot better.
And Phil did not out during the contract signing. Phil Lewis, Tracy Guns are here. The album is called The Missing Piece. It's out there right now. It was one of my top albums of last year.
It was your top album.
It was.
Of
it was 2016. The other one,
2017, right, because 2016 was the Strutz record, even though I noted it was the year early.
So, yeah, we'll take that.
So, yes, the number one album of 2017 for me was L.A. Guns, The Missing Piece.
Me too.
Thank you so much.
And there's like I said before, I was very sincere about this. There's a lot of these guys, they make new records. You say, yeah, okay, whatever. There's a song or two. It's okay. this record is right up there to me with the records you've made in the past. It's of that quality, if not more, and it's an amazing record. So everybody check it out if you haven't, listening wherever you are, check it out. Let's get a couple questions on before I let you guys get out of here. We have people in the audience, so who wants to ask a question to Tracy and Phil? I mean, don't be shy now. Jay, come on up, man.
You already asked me if I drank.
Jay with the very cool Draw the Line Aerosmith shirt.
Yeah, that's a shirt.
1988, Spectrum in Philadelphia, opening up for AC/DC. You guys were, I saw these guys, they're going down the back in the backstage on skateboards and all wanged up because you went to Zipperhead and bought all your next clothes for your next tour, right?
Yeah.
That's my memory.
I even remember that. I
know.
Remember anything.
You were like young shitheads like
those
us.
Arenas are great for skates, you know?
Right?
Yeah. So good. Yeah, it was perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I did that. I think I skated all the way through Vampire.
Yeah,
right?
No, amazing. It was great.
You guys were connected. We love it.
Thank you.
You skateboarded through the arenas on the AC/DC tour?
Well, yeah. I mean, on all of them because I grew up in California, so, you know, BMX, surfing, skateboarding. So when we left L.A., you know, the very first tour, I found where every skate park was on the tour, you know, so I'd have something to do during the day. You know, we didn't have, you know, the personal rectangles that we have today.
Right.
So I skated a lot until I was 40 and I tweaked my wrist and that was it.
You skateboard as well, Phil?
I was rollerblading, actually. It was just something to do. You know, we had hours to kill, and I'd just go around and around these arenas. And it was a lot of fun.
Was the first LA Guns tour opening for AC/DC?
Some of it, yeah.
The very first thing we did was Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
Really?
And then Cheap Trick.
Yeah.
And then we were miserable because after Cheap Trick... Oh, no, this is what happened. Okay, Cheap Trick. And then all of a sudden, Cheap Trick was ending, and we didn't know what was going to go on. And literally, like 2 weeks later, we were on the AC/DC tour. You know, it just happened. It happened really fast. But at the end of that, I think we did that for 3 weeks, that one. And we ended up in a club in Florida. Like, you know, we do the AC/DC tour, arena tour. And then we had the reality day, you know.
Pensacola.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, shit.
And we were playing with a band that they had put on tour with us that we had never met, we never heard of, called Saving Abel or was it the other ones, the brothers? I don't know. But, you know, they were cool. And we got there, and as soon as we walked in, Guns N' Roses pulled off the Maiden tour and suggested us, and we got the tour.
Oh, God,
So we never had to do that gig. It was like, wow, maybe there is.
Wait,
so,
you
yeah, guys so we did. We opened for them, and it was in New Mexico. Was it Santa Fe? And it didn't go well at all.
Iron Maiden.
Opened for Iron Maiden?
Yeah,
after
AC/DC. But they were waiting for, they wanted Guns N' Roses, and we came in last minute. For some reason, GNR pulled off, and they were not happy about it.
No. I'm doing like this thing. I'm doing this thing, and we're playing like a huge rodeo arena because it was a dirt floor, I remember. I think it was in Texas. And, you know, I'm doing my thing. I'm like, I'm Jimi Hendrix, man. I'm such a badass. And I quietly hear, Maiden.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, man. I felt like Napoleon Dynamite. You know, I'm like, gosh. Yeah, that was a brutal tour of the Maiden.
Steve Harris is on the ship if you want to try to see if he remembers any of that. Yeah. You know?
He doesn't have time for us.
And AC/DC you went down, I would imagine,
twice,
okay?
Yeah, that was good. You know, the great thing about AC/DC is that all their stage production, it came up from underground. So when we were playing, all the stuff was underground. So we set up.
Had everything.
We had the whole stage. It was huge, huge arena, stadium stages, and we could run around like the Rolling Stones. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
And what about playing with Uncle Ted? Because I'm sure at that point, Ted was in his MTV era,
no,
right?
He was doing good. You know, I toured with Ted and Girls, so he knew me. We knew each other. And he's like, not you again. And I was like, imagine that, small world. And he's really, I mean, I don't know about, you know, he doesn't have very good press, but whatever. But he's a nice guy. He's always been nice to me and us.
Absolutely.
And, you know, generous and friendly. I don't get it. You know, I don't care about the politics.
Me neither. I've said that all the time.
He's a great musician. He always puts on a great show.
Yep.
When he first went in Girl, when we were opening for him, he'd do the whole thing with the loincloth and he'd swing on stage like Tarzan, literally, at the beginning of every show. He was a maniac.
Yeah, I agree with you on Ted. I think people forget what a great player and how many great songs and musicians and what the politics. If you're down with it, fine. If you're not, fine. No. But I'm about when we had Ted on that metal show, man. People went crazy. Like I had half of the audience in the emails I got was the greatest episode you guys ever did, and the other half is like, "Fuck you! I'm never watching you again the rest of your life." Everyone's like, "All we did was talk about music and how much all this stuff." I mean, stop with
He's
that.
Very
Everybody,
polarizing,
calm down, man.
He is.
Divisiveness.
Yeah. Anybody else a question for Phil or Tracy before we let them get out of here? The guy in the back getting out, you just going to get another beer or you're going to come ask a question? No? Come on up, sir. Yeah, all come on. Usually it takes one. Everybody loosens up and gets the nerve to come
we
up.
Don't buy it.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
You guys started the tour in Vallejo, right?
California?
Yeah. I was one of a few people at that show. It's Northern Cal. It's a really...
It was that theater. That
the Empress Theater in Vallejo.
That was good.
Really, you guys played fantastic, but Phil said something at the end that kind of indicated you were a little disappointed with the showing. And I was.
He does at the end of every show. He's like,
no. It was a rainy Tuesday night. It wasn't very well attended, but you know,
did you say?
I didn't say nothing. He's joking. did we play a show like we were playing an arena? Did we? Did we
the
kick ass like we couldn't give a fuck?
It
couldn't care
10.
Less whether there's 60 or 60,000. It was the same show.
Right. So the tour is gone.
Yes, my fan. Yeah, a few more people showed up.
I can attest to that. I was at the show at the Culture Room the other day in Fort Lauderdale, and the place was jam-packed, man.
Yeah, and the night before in Tampa.
Yeah.
I get nervous every night now because it's so packed, I think I'm going to suffocate.
Yeah,
really. I really think that. I'm like,
had some good
I'm
numbers.
Like, is it at least a little bit light? No, it's hot in there and it's packed and you're 52. Go do it. All right.
And do you feel now that it's been a little while? Like, is the word out that you? Because some people are disconnected. They don't even know anything about anything. Is the word getting out now that you
Thanks
two guys
to you,
are
back much.
Together
yeah,
and doing your
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, you know, people are really complimentary. They come up to me and they're so glad you guys are back together again. And most people know about it. And we've sort of moved on from the reunion thing. Now this is the missing piece. That's what we're focusing on. You know, it's a sort of a given that it's a reunion.
We're lucky as hell, man. That's all I can say.
We are.
I can't believe what's
going
on.
We certainly are.
It's great.
And just in wrapping up, what's the future? Just staying out on the road? You going out of the country some, you said before?
You know, and we're already thinking about new record, you know, new songs coming
I've already
up
written
ideas,
all the music
and,
for the
new record. You know, so, it's we're keeping busy.
Yeah, good.
Well, the thing is, you know, I could probably only do this for 15 more years. Phil's going to live to 120, so, you know. He's going to have to replace me eventually. I'm always an album ahead right
Why
now.
Why do you say you can only do it 15 more years? You
nobody wants to see me in my mid-70s.
No, you said you're 52.
Oh, yeah, maybe,
years,
20, maybe 20 more years.
You'll have 20.
Yeah, no big deal.
You know, this is funny because... real quick, I was on their bus the other day after the show in Fort Lauderdale, and so this is like people wonder what kind of craziness goes on a bus or backstage these days with these artists. We're sitting there talking about our mortality, how much longer we all have to live, what meds, what cholesterol medicine, who does this, that's
not
good.
Me.
This guy is
you're a vampire.
But Phil's the opposite. You know, Phil's just like age is a number. But when you look like Phil at his age, and you can still sing like that,
it's in your head. Man, it's all in your head, you know. It's just like
it's always been in my head. That's the problem.
don't count, and you know, as far as mortality goes, you know, there are people dying in their 20s. You know, 27, 28. You know, just
wait.
The two necessarily don't have to go hand in hand.
Here's a different perspective. So, you know, I collect guitars, right? Now when I buy a guitar, I try to figure out how old it's going to be when I die. I used to buy guitars based on, this is vintage now. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
What was I doing when it was made? How old am I? Yeah, it's a good one.
Truth.
Yeah, no, truth. It's not.
Because, you know, I just got that 60, and I'm like, oh, man, if I can make it another 30, this thing is going to be...
How much is going to be worth?
Tracy ponders that. He takes another drag on a cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
Don't smoke, you son of a bitch.
Hey, consistency, man. Right. I just stay consistent.
All right, well, we want you around. That's all I'm saying, because the music these guys are making now is the best, is as good, if not better, than anything they've done. And live, wait until you see him if you haven't yet on the ship.
Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow, 10:45 on the ship.
And everybody listening around America and Canada that aren't on the ship, they'll see you, around LAGuns.com, right? It's a way to place to find
LA Guns Music.
LA Guns Music.
Yeah, LAGuns.com belongs to some Russian guy. He bought it 20 years ago. Yeah. And he wants me to give him 10 grand. And I'm like, dude, what are you going to do with it? Get 10 grand from you eventually. It's like, no, you're not.
So. All right. So that's it.
Well, my thanks to Michael Grant and, well, no, Michael Grant's coming up. My thanks to Tracy Guns and Phil Lewis and, of course, the great live audience we had there on Sirius XM Volume for my live broadcast from the Monsters of Rock Cruise. And, of course, thanks to everybody on board the Monsters of Rock Cruise for coming out and all the great support. So I want to transition now into our next interview, which is connected to this. I told the story at the top of the podcast. Michael Grant, the band's newer guitar player, much younger guy, still a member of LA Guns, complimenting Tracy Guns. His story is really fascinating. I encourage you to have a listen. This happened a day or two after the interview you just heard, but still on board the Monsters of Rock Cruise. Michael Grant now from LA Guns on the Eddie Trunk podcast. Good to see you, man.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Hi, guys.
And your story is interesting, man, because like I said, I was telling you earlier, we were having lunch at the buffet, and I always knew you. I knew... I was talking to Tracy about this the other day. You were in the non-Tracy version of LA Guns.
Yeah, for like 4 years.
Right. You were Tracy's replacement for Phil, basically.
Exactly. And it was just me on guitar. Like, Phil played, he jangled on guitar a little bit, but for the most part, you know, I try to always, like, even back then, I was like, hey, man, why don't you just sing? You know, I'll take care of the guitar. He's like, oh, well, I like to play guitar because, you know, I feel naked without it. And I was like, when you spend enough time with the dude, you could sound just like him.
Yeah.
And he was
so,
just like...
So did you think that... I would imagine you thought that once he and Tracy started talking again and the writing was on the wall that Tracy was going to come back, that you might be out of a gig.
I thought definitely I was out of a gig. I was going to bartending school. I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to be a bartender, you know.
But you and Tracy had actually been communicating. You were his replacement. You were in this warring version of the band from a lot of people's viewpoint. But he had actually embraced you. I mean, he said this on the air with me more than one time. He was a fan. He liked your interpretation of the songs he did.
Yeah.
And then I guess that helped in him saying, no, stick around. You know, we want you in.
You know, I guess being a little rebel like that, it helped me out in a way. When the previous lineup of LA Guns, I specifically told them, mostly because I didn't grow up listening to LA Guns.
You're younger than the other guys by a good 20, 25 years.
Right.
You're in your mid-30s.
So I grew up listening to different shit. So when people... Ooh.
You can say that.
Oh, I can say shit?
Yeah.
Because I got charged a lot of money on the radio one day.
No. You're good here. This is satellite radio. You're good.
Okay, yeah. Fucking A, man.
Yeah,
that's
you're
awesome.
All good. Yeah, it's all good. Well, you were telling me you grew up in the Philippines.
Yeah.
So again, and I'm jumping around a little just because I want to get your story out because we have limited time. But you grew up in New York City.
I was born in Queens, and I was kind of bicoastal by the time I was 10 because I had my mom's side of the family's all in California and my dad's side of the family's all in New York. So just like this bicoastal baby. When I was in junior high, I got expelled from the eighth grade for selling drugs, and this kid ratted me out. And, you know, they called me on an intercom one day at school and they were like, you know, well, Michael Grant, please come to the office. And I knew I wasn't getting a medal. You know, like, so I go to the office and the kid that I sold some weed to, he was like...
When you say selling drugs, was it just weed or were you into heavier stuff?
No, it was just weed. At that time, I mean.
That's barely a drug anymore now.
Yeah, exactly.
But at that time, yeah.
I was just an entrepreneur, you know? Like,
you were ahead of the curve.
I come from an impoverished family. I mean, we lived in the fucking projects in Queens. So, like, you know, you had to have a side hustle to kind of help out. And, you know, although it was an agreement with my parents or anything like that, at least, you know, I could, like, oh, you don't have to worry about my lunch, Ma. I got it.
Right.
Because
it is true, you're not being funny. I mean, you literally grew up extremely poor.
Extremely poor.
Yeah. So then you get busted for doing the drugs, and your family exports you to the Philippines.
I get expelled from school, naturally. And my mom sends me to Philippines for boot camp.
Because your mom is from there?
Because my dad and my both of them are Filipino. My mom is Filipino and Japanese. So if you're ever trying to figure out my mix, there you go.
Okay. So you go to Philippines at 11.
I go to Philippines
and
at
then
11.
What happens? This is great.
I go to the mall one day. It's this place called Mega Mall in Manila, and there's an ice skating rink on the bottom floor. And I, you know, I'm just going ice skating. And this, you know, this gay talent scout comes up, and he's, you know, he's all like touchy feely and fruity, and he's just like, oh, you know, who are you? And I'm like, I don't know, I just got expelled.
I'm an 11-year-old.
I'm an 11-year-old,
right?
And you know, fast forward a couple weeks, I end up doing like feature films and stuff, like Child Star, like kind of like gay ass Glee shit, and like. I mean, I'm 11. What do you expect, you know?
Because when we were in the buffet, the reason why this came up is you were talking to somebody in a foreign language who was working, a worker
so,
on the ship.
I don't know if you guys know this, but the entire crew is Filipino. So, you know what I mean? So, naturally, I have a rapport with them when I start speaking the language with them because I'm fluent. And one guy recognized me, and he was like, oh my God, I remember you. I remember you from this movie. I won't say it. You probably had to do some research to find it.
So wait, because he recognized you as an actor,
yeah,
as a kid in a Filipino hit movie.
Yeah, and that shocked me. That's why we were talking, like, we were all riffing, because I'm sure to you it sounded like, baga, baga,
baga, baga. Yeah, right. That's why I said, what the hell are you talking about?
I was like, dude, he recognized me. And it, like, and I couldn't believe it, because, you know, I had a hat on, I had shades on. You know, I look like a stormtrooper or something like that. Like, and he was, you know, it was kind of like a Eddie Murphy coming to America moment where the dude was like, oh, my God, you know.
Yeah, I saw the guy.
Zabunda.
What was the name of your character? You don't want to say it. Was it Zabunda?
No, my character in the movie?
Yeah, that he recognized you as.
Oh, no. It was my actual name. Which,
okay.
I don't right, like to really.
All right, don't worry about it. It's okay. I thought
because
wait,
then
wait,
I'm
no,
going
to no,
no. be. I'm
oh wait,
put
wait.
On
so
blast.
He knew you by your real name.
Yeah,
and that's what he referred to you as. But he didn't call you as the character you played in the film.
No,
he recognized you.
He
from.
Called me my name because I did like three films, major motion picture films over there, and you know they had some impact, and he just was like, he kept on looking at me while I was grabbing some ham. I was grabbing ham, and then I think what gave it away is I said thank you in Filipino. I was like, "Oh, salamat pare, sige ingat," and he was like. Then the lady comes and she's doing like a spy eye on me, and then they kind of
put it together, right?
And then they said the name, and I was like, "Oh, shit!"
Right, I'm out.
I was
I've
like,
been
"Keep
outed.
It low, girl. Keep it low. Don't be telling them, man. These white folks don't know."
Yeah. I'm just the badass young hotshot guitar player in LA Guns. They don't know me for anything else here. So, and that's interesting because you end up going there to get straightened out. You become a star, and then that actually enables you to get the bug for music and actually buy a guitar and chase music. Is that correct?
And also support my family for like 2-3 years.
Right. So, and you were telling me the game changing sort of record band for you. That set you on your path for rock was Smashing Pumpkins.
Smashing Pumpkins, 100%. That was the last band that I like really obsessed about, where you like you go crazy and you got the posters and the box sets and like you're analyzing lyrics and you're asking other motherfuckers like, what does song mean to you? What does this song mean to you? Like, what does this lyric mean? I was very just like, and it's been a while since another band came and did that to me, like, you know,
right.
Besides like Prince, Michael Jackson, like, you know, other influences like that.
Speaking of Prince, if you go see LA Guns, Michael has a solo spot in the show. And I said to Tracy this the other day, it's incredibly cool that they really let you shine in this. This could have easily been Tracy Guns and just pushed you to the back, but they're letting you
very fortunate.
They're letting you play some guitar up there. They're giving you a solo moment where you do Purple Rain on your own out there. It's really very
cool.
And
I actually listened to the show that he did in New York with you guys. And man, what he said about me, I was just like, I was just so touched, to be honest. Like, I was listening to it. I was like, oh, shit, I didn't know it was like that.
But you, just to finish off your story in the Reader's Digest version, so then you get into music, you start playing, you start writing, you start singing, and all these things that you're doing. And then the first band that you did, was it End After?
End Ever After? Yeah.
So that was here in America,
obviously. That was here in America.
When did you come back from the Philippines?
I came back from the Philippines, actually, in the late 90s, like 99.
Okay.
Something like that.
And then you start, is that when you start to make a run at being a musician?
Yeah, but like locally, you know, I had like little local bands. It wasn't until, you know, I lived in California, moved to LA and started Endeavor After. Well, I started Endeavor After in Sacramento, but once that took off, we relocated to LA. Shit started to pop off, you know, and that's where it all kind of started. And that's how I, you know, that's how I got on the Motley Crue's. That's how I got on, you know, we played Ship Rocked at the time. We did like some of those first rock cruises way back in like 2007, 2006.
Right. Now, is that band done?
That band is pretty done. I got another band called The Assassins I'm working on, and I'm pretty excited about that.
And who's in that?
So far, me probably some kids you don't really know.
And what kind of band is it? Is it going to be heavy rock?
It's going to be heavy rock mixed in with some other influences of mine. You know, I have a very eclectic array of different influences that I just kind of, you know, the music that I feel is missing is the music I feel I'm making.
Well, my thanks to Michael Grant for joining me here on the Eddie Trunk podcast. Like I said, a phenomenal story, and I'm glad I gave Michael a few minutes, got a chance to get a little bit out for you here, both on my radio show and now here on the podcast as well. And again, earlier, Phil Lewis and Tracy Guns, appreciate them dropping by as well. Hope you enjoyed this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. And again, check out the band's new album. Check them out on tour coming to a town near you. Just check the website for dates. As I mentioned earlier, next thing for them, I'll be hosting a show with them in Tulsa on April 13th at the IDL Ballroom. Appreciate you guys listening each and every week. The Eddie Trunk podcast is new on Thursdays at podcastone.com and iTunes. Katie Irizarry is the producer. Don't forget, Amazon.com/shop/EddieTrunk. Anytime you're shopping on Amazon, EddieTrunk.com is my website. Mentioned all the cool things going on there. And you can also follow on social media, and I hope you do, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Eddie Trunk. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next Thursday for another all-new episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Legends of Sport with Andrew D. Bernstein. The Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame photographer has hit the podcasting scene. Each Tuesday starting February 27th, Andy and co-host Jonas Wadler will chat with some of the world's most prestigious athletes of all time. Enjoy stories from life behind the scenes with the most decorated sports photographer in the business. Make sure to subscribe to Legends of Sport with Andrew D. Bernstein, beginning Tuesday, February 27th, exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the brand new Podcast One app.